Hi, I'm your host, Jerry Ellis, and welcome and thanks for joining me on this episode of Talking Apes. We're the podcast that gets to the heart of what's happening with and to apes like us. Talking Apes is made possible by generous support from listeners like you and from our growing number of Patreon members. Find out how you can support Talking Apes by visiting us on talkingapes.org. Hang on. Our regular Talking Apes intro theme just seems a bit all wrong for today's topic. And one, quite honestly, you might find frustrating and disgusting. But it's one we felt that was really important to bring to light. Few things are as insidious as the brutalities and ethical crimes against animals, especially against apes and primates. Thanks to large multi-billion-dollar media corporations, criminals responsible for these acts have been handed a platform to reach millions with their disgusting videos. It's called social media. With millions of dollars to be made, social media platforms have been unresponsive and sometimes just flat out ignoring the problem. Recent investigations show that over $25 million annually is at stake in just a handful of these. Money in the pockets of the creators of this cruelty content and in the key digital platforms providing their outlet, places like YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. Appearance on these platforms is but one phase in a vicious cycle. A five-part vicious cycle we will break down in this episode and explore with my next guest, Nicola O'Brien, lead coordinator from the Social Media Animal Cruelty Coalition, or more commonly known as SMAC Coalition. Nicola is one of a team of just two, spearheading a coalition of 19 nonprofits across Asia, the United States, and Europe. Organizations horrified by the corporate indifference to halt this cruelty. Nicola is my guide on a journey into the dark, everyday world of social media animal cruelty, with our focus on the crimes committed against apes and primates. Hi, Nicola, and welcome to Talking Apes. Thank you for being on and being willing to talk about a subject that neither one of us really would like to be discussing.
Thank you, Jerry. Really lovely to be on. I'm looking forward to our conversation, and I hope that your listeners will learn a lot and take away some practical things that they can do to deal with, you know, support and help with this issue.
Yeah, it really is. It is an issue that we do need to somehow find a solution to. And I know you're working very hard to do that. But before we get into some of the details about it, why don't we give folks a bit of a background for you and for the organization that you work with, Asia for Animals and the SMAC Coalition. So how did you get started on in all of this? This isn't something that, you know, most little girls grow up wanting to do.
No, I mean, apparently when I was younger, my mum said I always liked animals, but it wasn't until I was about 14, 15 that I was walking down the high street. I remember in town with my friends and saw an information stall that like the local animal rights group had put out, and it just had leaflets about all these different things that happened to animals. And I remember kind of walking away from it and walking around town, and it just was in my mind of like, yeah, I felt like my mind was blown basically about these things that I hadn't really thought about. And so I went back, and then basically from there, I became my new obsession of like learning about these things and obviously trying to do something about it, and just, you know, the injustice of how we treat other animals. So I did lots of local volunteering with environmental groups and animal groups, volunteered at animal rescues. I was lucky to have a really great one not far from me. And then from there, I went to university and studied animal welfare, and was really fortunate to do a placement at a primate sanctuary, which is based in the south of England, called Wild Futures Monkey Sanctuary. And there, it was great. It was my first experience in with wild animals, particularly primates. And all of the animals there were rescued from the pet trade in the UK, which unfortunately is still legal. And it was just a really great, amazing experience. And I learned about the connectiveness of all the issues. So when I was there, it wasn't just about, hey, let's take these animals in. It was also about, well, what else can we do to stop this trade? And so Wild Futures and the Monkey Sanctuary, with many other great organizations, were doing public awareness and also campaigning, lobbying the government to have the law changed. So, you know, it merely made me think, yeah, this is it. It's not just, yeah, I get to work in a sanctuary, but you know, it's that other part that I had touched me in the beginning of that awareness raising and how important that was, and collecting signatures on petitions or lobbying, you know, government representatives. So after that, I then went to work for an organization that's now called Freedom for Animals. And there again, we were lobbying for changes in the primate pet trade, but also lots of other issues of animals in captivity, and in particular, animals used for entertainment. So wild animals in circuses. And then after almost 10 years there, I was introduced to Asia for Animals, and they were looking for someone to head up their work on this social media animal cruelty issue. And I guess because I'd done a lot of kind of public awareness and campaigning work in the past, I thought I was a good fit, and I was really interested because it was new to me in a way, you know, like even though I'd worked on the past in animals and entertainment, and I knew there was some of this on social media. I just didn't know the scale of it and the variety of content that exists out there, the species that are involved. And unfortunately, I think the thing that's really got me about this is that I feel like it undermines a lot of the work that everyone else is doing to try and better things for animals and the environment and the planet, because you can go online and watch, you know, a wild animal being kept as a pet in someone's house, and there's so much of that out there, and people think it's normal. And I think that's really damaging, and it grows on such a scale, it's hard for those of us that are trying to send another message, you know, to keep up with it. So that's my long road to how I got into this issue.
So you began working with Asia for Animals, but this coalition was set up when? Now, it goes by the acronym SMAC, S-M-A-C-C, but that stands for?
Social Media Animal Cruelty Coalition.
And that's really the heart of where we're going today, is this social media component. I mean, it's almost ironic that the very medium in which you're trying to change is also the medium in which you need to get the awareness component out. Yeah. It's a bit strange.
It is a bit strange. And as we'll, you know, I'm sure we'll get into, we are trying to work with the platforms so that they are improving what they're doing and removing this content. But with one of them in particular, we're also discussing potentially promotion. So using their platform to put out alternative messages, which I think is probably the best solution. You know, we can use their platform and their audience to get that message out. But yeah, there is this big challenge alongside that of actually getting the bad content removed and making it a better place for, you know, what we want to teach about animals.
We face very much the same challenge. And that's why it was part of the reason I was so fascinated to talk to you, because before we started talking apes, other platform, Apes Like Us on YouTube, was the principal way we were trying to get out information about what's happening in conservation areas and sanctuaries. And we faced that same issue there, is how do you make the story of what's happening to these animals compelling to people, yet at the same time, not make it baby dangling and not make it, you know, just looking like everybody gets to hold and handle babies in the wild. Yet at the same time, as you're well aware of from working in a sanctuary, that, you know, when you, especially with chimpanzees and some of the great apes, when they've been gone through the horror that they've gone through to end up in a sanctuary as tiny babies, they need that comforting. They need the very thing that you don't want to be showing people that you're doing. They need love and they need comforting, but they need it 24/7, and they need it for a very long time. It's not just, you know, something that's cute for the moment. So where's that sweet spot between creating awareness, but not doing the very thing that we're trying to stop?
Yes, I think it's really difficult, basically, which is why, you know, you're struggling to describe it, because we do live in a world where social media and promotion of what we're doing as animal advocates or sanctuaries is really important. You know, it's one of the ways that we can raise awareness about the issues. It's how we can get support from the public financially and otherwise to be able to keep doing what we're doing. And it's trying to play with the rules of social media in terms of what do people like to see and what will they engage with and what will they share. I think there are ways that sanctuaries and others can do that, which I think is giving context and giving disclaimers, and also, I guess, being selective about what you put out. Like, there is definitely things that perhaps you don't need to show on social media that is required for that individual and that individual's care. But if it's hard to contextualize for the viewer so that they realize why it's really important and why it can only be applied in this sanctuary setting, then maybe we do have to say, okay, that's not something that we should share. Bottle feeding of animals always comes to mind, because that we see a lot in sanctuaries and particularly with primates, and not to say that that's not necessary in the sanctuary setting, but we see that action played out so much in the content, particularly with primates, where we have people that have primates as pets, and then they're, you know, they've got them in nappies or diapers and they're dressing them up and they're bottle feeding them. And so that is one for me that I increasingly think is probably something that sanctuaries should avoid showing if they can. But yeah, it's a tough one, I think. And maybe it's about drawing up guidelines around things like that, you know, things that we're noticing that are actions that are being portrayed in content. And we really, really want to not be teaching that as an okay way to interact with animals.
Yeah. It's interesting, because as I was doing the research leading up to us having this conversation, it got me thinking about, you know, the long history that we have with interacting with apes and presenting apes in the media. And while we're going to focus a lot on social media, I think we would be remiss if we neglected to talk about the fact that from the beginning of television, really, and even before that in print, there are ads that go back into the early 1900s showing chimps on tricycles, mm-hmm. and dressed up in clown clothes and things like that to sell a product. But then, especially starting in the 1950s, I mean, Ham was the chimp that NASA sent into space. And Ham became a celebrity and was on talk shows, you know, in the early 60s and stuff for that. And I mean, even, you know, you're based in the UK, there's the PG tip monkey, very famous there. Mm-hmm. And in its own way, I mean, Jane Goodall, I mean, all of the images we saw of Jane Goodall, in fact, all the Leakey's ladies, so to speak, Jane Goodall, Diane Fossey, and Bruti Caldicus. Every one of those National Geographic pieces have them in very close proximity to one of the apes they're studying. They're not wearing a mask. They're not wearing gloves. They're not, you know, because it just wasn't something we thought about at the time in terms of zoonotic disease exchange, which is also a big problem of this kind of proximity to the primates. But so there's all that history, and it feels like you're now coming in at a point where you're trying to shift this narrative in social media, but we've got a lot of cultural baggage to unpack that's sitting there underneath all of this, that if we don't, it's almost like if we don't address it, we'll never address the real root of the problem. And that is, they aren't us. Despite the fact that we call this talking apes and we call our other apes like us. So how do you go about that in the work that you're doing, getting people to see them as their own creatures and not us?
Again, you know, we deal with so many different species that we're looking at in this cruelty content on social media, but so many of them are primates. And you know, we've had this discussion ourselves around why in particular, and it's relates to everything that you've just said, you know, why. And I think it is that proximity to us, that they can look like almost little humans. And particularly when people want to keep them as pets, they want to dress them up, they want to bottle feed them, they push them around in prams. They very much treat them that way, even more so than we see with other species that may still be cute and cuddly. But, you know, I think it must be that proximity to us and the similarities. And it's not just in the social media content, as you say, like a huge area for us is in other media. So you talked about the PG tips monkeys or chimps as they were. But also in films, you know, we see so often the depiction usually of capuchins, again, standing on their back legs. So they've been trained to look humanistic, to wear clothing. And people find that entertaining and endearing, which I'm not an expert on why exactly. But again, it seems to come down to that similarity that we can make them look human. And when we see examples from tourism, another place where primates are exploited greatly, often there might be instances where they've been trained to do tricks in a circus. Again, they're making them appear very human-like, or they're trained on the streets as an entertainer and then you can have your photo taken with them. So it does seem to be this humanization that draws people to the content. And you're right, you know, SMAC focuses on social media. We have an awareness of the historic context, the other context. And like I said, a lot of this ends up on social media. You know, a lot of what we're talking about covers so many different aspects of exploitation, where we have the tourism type selfies and footage of the animals being made to perform, or someone who's been to a circus and that ends up online. But it's a lot. It's a lot to tackle by just tackling social media. But what we think now is because of the way that it's evolving, and because social media is basically another form of communication on a daily, regular basis for the majority of the human population, that if we can make changes there, we feel like that's a good place to start. You know, it could have such wide-reaching implications when the content that we're talking about, some of these videos have millions, collectively billions of views. You know, if we could get, even if it was primate-related content, restricted on some of these platforms, and ideally having educational messages as to why that's been restricted, that could be a great way of getting in front of masses and actually bringing that message to people more effectively than perhaps our traditional ways of kind of doing it more one-on-one, just coming from our organization.
So let's talk about for a minute the types of content that we're talking about, mm-hmm. and where the cruelty lies, because I think that we need that so that we can have a couple of other conversations. Some of the things that would be described as cruelty, I don't think people would see as cruel. They would think, oh, that's just cute. So mm-hmm. maybe you could walk us through some of the things that you guys have broken down as you know, components or content that would be deemed cruel.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, with primates in particular, but again, with a whole host of species, we see content that is very clearly violence, abuse, torture in a lot of cases, unfortunately, where animals are being harmed in whole manner of violent ways to be filmed. And unfortunately, there is a small, hopefully small community, but still, you know, big enough, but a niche group that love to see that. And they create pages where they just create this content and they want to share it. And there's even people who will pay for such content to be made. So particular acts to be carried out on animals. It's really...
That was something I was absolutely stunned about, that there were actually people who are paying to see a primate murdered mm-hmm. or butchered. Yeah. I mean, in really horrific, barbaric ways. And I mean, we don't need to go into the exact details, but it was one of the few times I've ever done research on anything. And I was so violently disgusted.
It's astounding. I mean, I have seen a lot of the videos, and it's really, really hard to watch. A lot of the time I can't watch them all the way through because it's so horrific. But I think what's even more disturbing is the comments and the conversations that happen between those in this community who are, you know, watching the videos and enjoying it and talking about the ways in which they would like to see the animals hurt. And it's strange. It's so hard to get your head around because it's very specific, and macaque monkeys in particular are victims for this. There's a whole community that do this. And, you know, I guess it's really difficult to get into the psyche of someone that would want to do that, but it's happening. It's on social media, and it is a big issue for us at the moment because there are technically this type of content should already be against the policies, the community guidelines that the platforms put out. So it should be being dealt with immediately and ideally not being allowed to be uploaded at all. But it's appearing on multiple platforms. And so we're really trying to push those platforms at the moment to enforce your own policy and remove this most clear example of violence towards animals. There's no debate here. This just should not be online.
Well, there are a lot of less clear examples, I guess you would say, of online cruelty. And we'll get to some of those right after the break. First, a quick check-in with assistant producer Demel Zabond. Heya.
Hiya, Jerry. Hi, everyone. Well, some of our audience, especially with a huge majority of you being from the States, might notice that mine and Nicola's accents are quite similar. We grew up in the same area and our paths have crossed many times over the years on these ongoing animal protection journeys we've both been on. So thank you to Nikki for coming on the show, and I can't think of anyone better to talk about this than someone who is spearheading really the only current effort that's 100% dedicated to combating this mammoth issue. This kind of reminds me of an episode we had earlier this season with another brave lady who confronts animal abuse. Don't you think so, Jerry?
Yeah, Demelza, absolutely. That was our conversation with Joanna MacArthur. I can't remember the episode number, do you?
Yep, so that was episode number 31, if anyone wants to listen. Now, I know the subject matter of this podcast is extremely dark and it isn't an easy listen, but I really implore you to stick with us because in a few minutes, Jerry is going to be asking Nicola about what we, you and me, can do to help combat this. And Nicola's got a brilliant and very straightforward step-by-step course of action that we can all take. Best part is we don't even have to watch these horrible videos or interact with them to help. Now, I know this is going to be useful to some of our listeners because many of you in the past have contacted me through our social accounts and asked what you can do when you come across online primate abuse. But I also hope this episode helps anyone out there who's still a little bit confused when it comes to those blurred lines. You love monkeys and apes, but you can't quite get your head around why it's so wrong when you see them playing, dressed in human clothes, for example. The truth is, if you're seeing those animals taken out of the natural environment, there's very likely some level of suffering going on underneath what we're seeing on the surface. I'll be posting useful links and resources from Nicola and Smack on talkingapes.org and all our socials. Don't forget to follow us, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and as always, if you've got any questions or comments, do reach out to me on there. Please, if you like the podcast, consider making a small donation or becoming a patron. Podcasting's expensive and we cannot do this alone. So thank you to our current supporters and head over to talkingapes.org if you want to learn more. And make sure, wherever you're listening, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, click that follow or subscribe button. You can do it right now. It takes 5 seconds. It helps us grow and we will love you forever. I'm excited to learn more about what we can do to aid Smack's efforts. So back to Nicola and Jerry to find out what the coalition is doing to target and end online animal abuse.
Nicola, for a few minutes, maybe you can talk about what appear to be the less egregious levels of abuse. You know, selfies and entertainment and, you know, and well-meaning stuff where people actually naively think what they're showing is something innocent or benign.
I mean, I think this is, even though the monkey hatred content sounds horrific and we are giving it attention, it's actually a small proportion of the issues that we're dealing with. It is this more benign less obvious to the average person content that is so much more of a challenge for that very reason. So again, with primates, you know, unfortunately, they are exploited in every way you could possibly think of. They feed, in fact, 70% of the animals that are in the content that we've collected and analyzed are primate species. So I think that's really important to note, because, you know, I keep saying primates a lot. It's not just because of this podcast. It is the reality that they are exploited in so many different ways. One of the biggest areas, of course, is them being kept as pets. And, you know, I've talked a little bit about this before, about them being kept, you know, dressed up in clothes, in wearing nappies and diapers and having toys and being kept in someone's house and maybe being pushed around in a pram or taken out for a walk, you know, like a child, basically. And there is so much of this content. If you go onto any social media platform and type in baby monkey, you will come across so much of this. Rather than, there will be some there, but rather than it being predominantly content of infant monkeys in the wild, it's this now that we're finding, because people do think it's cute. You know, they're dressed up, they put bows in their hair. They have often have a whole group of these monkeys, and you know, there might be some boys and girls, and they'll be in pink and blue, and it's very cartoon like and presented intentionally as playful, cute, harmless content. But of course, we know that that is not the case. And it's worth saying that in terms of social media, there are these policies that are against this violent abuse of animals, but this psychological and this long-term abuse and suffering that animals endure, kept as a pet, a wild animal being kept as a pet away from their social group, you know, probably being taken away from their mothers very young so that they can attach to their owner. You know, they are suffering, and it is long-term suffering, but it's not recognized by the platforms or generally the public, because in that instance, that minute video you're watching, you might not see the animal in distress or, you know, them being hurt, but what has happened to get them there in the first place? You know, they've had to go through the wildlife trade. They've had to be taken from their mothers. They're living every day in a situation that doesn't meet their natural instincts. They're being made to wear clothing, which I've seen videos where they're clearly uncomfortable. They're trying to pull them off. They're being told off like they're being naughty children.
Nicola, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about was this thing called fake rescues. It just seems such a weird thing. Like, I just couldn't quite wrap my head around it when I first came across it in the research. But maybe you could describe it and what's it all about?
Yeah, it's fake rescue, basically. So, you know, we've all probably seen content online, hopefully from a reputable source, where animals have been rescued from dangerous situations, or, you know, stray animals that have been taken in and then they're cared for, and there's a happy ending to the story where they're either released back to the wild or they're rehomed as appropriate. But unfortunately, there is a growing trend that actually has been around for a number of years now, where content creators know that people like this kind of thing. So what they do is they stage scenarios where animals are put in danger and need rescuing. And they will film the scenario where the animal is maybe, for example, stuck under a rock or under some branches or a tree that's fallen down. But in reality, they've been put there. Or another type is where there might be an animal that's traditionally a prey species and then a predator species, and they're fighting, you know, the predator is trying to eat the prey, and in comes a human and rescues the animal from this situation. And these videos are very popular because, again, people think, oh, you know, that was awful, I'm so glad that someone was there to rescue the animal. But they're not real. They're fake. And we know that they're fake because often you can see on these accounts where they share these videos, that they have lots of the same video. But also, you might even notice that they're using the same scenario again and again, but maybe with different animals. So a couple of years ago, there was this trend. It was called Primitive Man. So if you searched for Primitive Man on social media, you would get a scene where it was like a cave that had been dug out in some sandy earth. And in the cave would be kittens or a baby monkey or a snake. And then in would come a big bird of prey or maybe a really large snake like a boa constrictor and would be attacking the animal. Or you might see a dog on the ground wrapped up in a huge boa. And again, just these scenarios that have been created, but you can tell they're fake by watching because often it's the same people. It's maybe the same location, but also there's generally a part of the film where there's at least 20 seconds, 30 seconds where they're just filming what's happening rather than actually just, which I would hope everyone instinct would be, would to just be get in there and save, not stand back and film for a while and watch the animals being hurt or struggling from the situation that they're in. And it fools a lot of people, unfortunately, so much so to the point where they can ask for donations and people seemingly donate. So they will say that they're a rescue or help us rescue more animals like this. But when you dig further, you know, there's no update around what happened to the animal. There's no website. There's no NGO behind it. It's just that video in that instance, and people have donated via PayPal, and who knows where that money has ended up.
Wow, it's like a weird reality TV show that everything is faked in. My God, wow.
Yes.
No, I just, that was one of the things that I ran across when I was looking at that list of cruelty things, and it blew me away. I'm like, what the hell could this be? Fake rescues. I mean, I know about rescues because I've been on a number of them where we've, yeah, you know, with dealing with poachers, and there's nothing fake about those. I mean, there's people with actual guns and things, yeah, are a bit dicey in trying to rescue, you know, baby gorillas or chimps or something. But no. Yeah.
And sometimes the situation is bizarre. So the newest trend seems to be, one of them at least, is pretending to remove ticks from animals. So there might be a cat or a dog and they're covered in what appears to be ticks, but in reality it's like beans or seeds that have been glued to the animal and then they're removed and then maybe they bandage them up or, you know, apply antiseptic or something like this. And again, people think that it's real. And I, you know, often wonder if that's part of that section of society that likes to watch these kind of satisfying videos where people are like popping spots and things like that, you know, because why you would want to watch someone remove ticks if it was real, I don't understand. But yeah, this is like, it's set up and it's staged, and we're finding it on lots of different accounts as well. So there's obviously trends that run through these communities where they copy each other and create this. And I also saw recently a trend where turtles were being taken out of the water and their carapace was stuck full of barnacles. And so the person was kindly removing the barnacles with a knife. But when you actually looked at the species, they were a freshwater species. So they were being taken out of the sea as though they'd just been stumbled across and were being rescued. But we believe they were being put there to be able to make content. And again, on this person's YouTube page, that is all they share are different videos, but the same action where they're supposedly rescuing turtles and helping them. Some of these ones are more convincing. And, you know, again, we just want people to look at things critically and say, okay, who is this that's done the rescue? Where is any potential donations going? What happened to the animals afterwards? You know, these are the questions that we can all ask ourselves and get clues from the footage. Do they share lots of these videos and there's not any clear outcomes beyond, you know, these rescue scenarios? These are things that people can use to make sure that they're not engaging with fake content.
There are so many levels of this. And because I've spent the bulk of my life around primates, and primates usually in the wild or in a sanctuary setting that have been rescued, I look at these videos and I go, they're not getting the nutrition they need. They're probably on a very limited diet. Even the people who own them, quote, I even hate that word, but the people who own these primates, even if they think they're doing the best for them, they're not, because they don't have any concept of what they are in the wild. And especially the fact that there's not a primate on this planet that is solitary. They're social creatures. Even orangutans, who don't spend much time visually in contact with each other, are talking to each other over kilometers all the time. And so the idea that these primates would be isolated from their own species is a level of cruelty.
It is. And that's exactly how we see it. But again, as you mentioned before, there is this challenge of people maybe have seen a monkey in a film, and, you know, they're by themselves and they're someone's pet in the film and they act human-like. So it is really trying to get people to see it through a different lens when they look, to look beyond that and to say, you know, I like to say to people, how did they get there? Why are they there? Why is that monkey there? Why is that primate there? And, you know, we have a vicious cycle, as we call it, around the impact that social media can have on particularly animals being kept as pets.
It's a really interesting chart, and we'll put it up on the blog that accompanies this. Our assistant producer, Damel Zaban, she's already been working on that. When she sent me the chart, this vicious cycle chart that you have created, I just thought it was really fascinating, and in the sense that it so clearly shows how these subjects are all connected. And it's like, I thought, damn, if we could just get that chart in front of everybody's face. This makes it really simple, makes it really clear. So we will definitely have it on the blog that accompanies this podcast. But if you could walk us through this thing, there's five components to it, and just show us how they're all connected.
Yeah. So you can start at any point in the cycle, but it makes sense to start in the social media part. So this is where wild animals are being kept as pet, and this is being promoted on social media. So whether that's a person's account where they themselves have the animal and they're showing their life with them and saying how great they are, often we're seeing instances now where owners are creating accounts for the animal and people then will want to follow. You know, we see it with dogs and cats, but we're seeing this for a whole host of species now. So they'll have their own social media page and they're creating really regular content. Again, trying to aim at this type of content where it looks cute and fun, maybe put some comedy music over the top, you know, all those things I'm sure we've seen. And people like it. And so they give it a thumbs up or a love heart. They might share it, retweet it. And we also see comments appearing, of course, people again saying this is cute, you know, adorable, asking questions about the animals. And this leads us to the next part of our cycle, where about normalization. So if you're seeing this, it appears normal. The animal appears fine from what you can tell in that video. It seems fun. The person seems well-meaning. And so you're not necessarily feeling concerned about it and you're interacting with that in a positive way. And you will note that this is probably not the only account that you've come across where you're seeing something very similar. So the more that you see that, the more you interact with it, it feels normal. And so the evidence that we have to make that assumption for us is because then when you go on to the next stage of the cycle, we see people in the comments. And here, people are, as I say, saying, this is cute, this is lovely. But then we start to see comments where people are saying, how do I get one? I would love one. I wish I could have one as a pet. And there have actually been some studies. One, I believe it was last year, released around galgos, so bush babies, and content, accounts like this I've described, where they're being kept as pets. And there was analysis done of the comments, and you can see how many comments and how popular it is becoming, for the comments to be focused around this angle around, where can I get one? I'd love one as a pet. So then we infer from that that this does indeed make people want the animals, which takes us to the next stage of our cycle, which is demand. And I think what I also like to point out here, it's not just, okay, we want these animals as pets. Probably, I don't know, 10 years ago, it would have been a limited number of animals, that exotic or wild animals, that you would know as being kept as pets. So you might know someone that had a bearded dragon as a pet, or tropical fish. But because of social media, that scope, that variety of species is becoming wider. Now you can see someone on the other side of the world that has an animal you've probably never heard of, but they're cute and they're fluffy. And actually, you can get them in your country as a pet. You know, you can probably even buy them online. You don't have to go to a specialist shop that you find out where that is and drive there. You can probably look online and find that animal. So it becomes easier to obtain. It's given you this idea. And so all of these things are adding to driving demand. And of course, to be able to fulfill that demand, we're getting into the trade aspect, where animals are being bred in captive facilities of whatever kind of conditions that might be. You know, that ranges wildly in terms of how the animals are bred, you know, mortality rates, how high they are they being fed appropriate foods? Can they ever have their needs met in that environment? And also, of course, live capture, because many species are still being caught from the wild to fuel the pet trade. And that in itself has high mortality for the individuals. It causes them immense suffering. And of course, it has impacts on the ecosystems and the habitats that these animals are being taken from. And shockingly, many of the species that we're talking about here are endangered or vulnerable in the wild. So, you know, it makes no sense to me that in any way you can be buying online an animal that is endangered in the wild. But from our, again, analysing our data, about 30% of the animals that we've found in content are classed as vulnerable, and about 28% are endangered. And we have a critically endangered species in there as well. So then what happens is you've bought your pet from this trade, and then you go, hey, I'm going to put photos of myself online with my animal, and I might create them a social media account. So then we're back into the first stage of the cycle, which again is more of the same content, which is, you know, growing that normality. It's enhancing the normalization, because it's yet another person, yet another account that has yet again has this animal as a pet, and everything seems happy and fine and the animal seems okay.
Thank you for walking us through that. As I was looking at this five-piece chart, every time I went to another phase of it, whether it was the pet trade or demand or comments, every one of them seemed to spawn their own little vicious cycle. Mm-hmm. So I actually drew my own charts coming off of your chart. Things like the demand and the pet trade, you also have zoonotic diseases. I mean, you're talking about essentially digital wet markets. In the last few episodes, we've had on people like David Quammen and talking about spillover and Ebola diseases and HIV, and all of these things have spawned out of this transfer of zoonotic diseases. Mm-hmm. That is something that's not even being touched on when I looked at what you're trying to do with the major platforms, Facebook and TikTok and Instagram, and looking at the rules that they have in. But what none of those addresses are these greater issues that are at stake. And we've just seen what can happen to a pandemic when it hits the planet and shuts global economies down. And quite honestly, that was a very mild pandemic. We're now looking at bird flu. And you were mentioning in the demand, breeding in captivity. Mm-hmm. A lot of these animals are bred in captivity, but they're caught from the wild. So it's somebody potentially moving diseases. So I just thought it was fascinating that we could do a podcast about any one of these five boxes. But let's go back to the social media for the purpose of our conversation. In thinking about how you're trying to arrest the problem, there seem to be three layers to me, and maybe you could talk a little bit about those. There's international laws and country laws, and in places like the United States, there's actually state laws. And then there's platform policies, and then there's individual awareness. So how do you tackle those three components?
I think this is the real benefit and strength of doing it as a coalition. So it's so big, it's so global, you know, SMAC as a team, we're two people. So, you know, it's really difficult to say we're going to take on laws in all the countries, because of course you can have, and we have come across this problem where a piece of content has been created in one country, it's being shared and engaged with in another, and perhaps in that other country, like the UK, it would be against the law if that act was carried out in the UK, but it's not. So they're not going to take any legal action against that piece of content. We'd hope that they would at least restrict it because it's showing an illegal act, but that isn't currently covered by law. So it's really hard. You know, we need a real joined up approach. So it's still a challenge, but the benefit of having a coalition where we can have different organizations based in different countries is that there are individual efforts being done on a country level to influence and change laws, and we can bring together those so that they can share how they best approached it, what tactics they use, maybe share resources, because obviously resources and cost is huge when it comes to lobbying government. So that is one way to make it more feasible, is that we can just have lots of people together, but having in a joined up manner. Example, in the UK, we are just on the cusp of bringing in a new UK online safety bill, which would put more onus on the social media platforms. It's mostly focused around protecting users from seeing disturbing, troubling content. And we're really pushing for animal cruelty content to be included as well, at least the most extreme. So therefore, that will have, there'll be more onus on the platforms to not allow that content on their platforms. But again, it's only going to cover the UK. There's still grey areas around content that's come from elsewhere that shows crime. So having a joined up approach as much as possible is one way that we're tackling it. And using opportunities like the UK Online Safety Bill, because that was being brought in anyway to protect and improve the environment online in the UK. And so we can utilise that. And in the EU, they brought in a Digital Services Act, which again was to capture and try to address these quite modern problems of people being exposed to content that may cause mental harm or distress. So using those existing processes to get animals on the agenda as well. The platforms themselves, we have the approach of SMAC, our team, we have relationships with certain platforms, but we are there to represent all the member organizations. And again, there's strength in that because individually, organizations in the past were reaching out to the likes of Meta and TikTok, and not everyone was asking for the same things. And it therefore potentially could make the process longer. It could make it less direct. And some of the platforms didn't want to talk to everybody. Because, you know, trying to convince them to care about this issue at all and to have a meeting with us is tough. So we want to make it, in a way, as easy on them as possible so we can come with one clear ask that hopefully we're all agreed on and we can look for real change and keep on them, but still have that pressure in the background of all these organizations that are there. They're all looking at you. They're all going to escalate this if necessary to be able to hopefully get them to act and move on what they're promising us that they will do.
What is their biggest resistance to this that you find? Is it sheer dollars? Are they making enough money? I mean, because we just talked about earlier the fact that these videos often get millions of views. They're making money and they're making reasonable amount of money, at least tens of millions.
Yeah, I mean, one of our member organizations, Lady Freethinkers, based in the US, they actually looked at about 2,000 videos showing animal cruelty content and estimated that they could be making about 15 million between them through monetization. And then that in turn would make around 12 million for the platform, which was YouTube. So, you know, it is business. That's largely why social media is so big, you know, advertising. It's why they want to give us these free platforms to access and socialize on, because, you know, cynical as that sounds, but, you know, advertising is how they make their money. And so when there's a content creator who's getting loads of views, loads of engagement, they are eligible for monetization through adverts. And this is huge, particularly on a platform like YouTube, when, you know, we've all been on a video and then adverts pop up. Well, that person is making money, and it's only applied to those that are popular in terms of engagement. So there's money to be made. It's another incentive for those creating the content. But yeah, it is money to be made for the platforms as well.
Should it be a two-pronged attack? Part of this should be targeted at the advertisers. So if it's XYZ company that is a consistent advertiser across those videos, like going to them and saying, do you see how your product is being represented? I would think that would cause a huge reaction within those companies.
Yeah, I mean, I think similar has been done. I think it was hate speech on Facebook. And there was a whole period, maybe a week or a couple of weeks, where lots of companies who normally put a lot of advertising revenue into Facebook stopped and refused to do it as a protest. And that's a really great tactic. So it's definitely something that could be tried as well with animal cruelty content. We have unfortunately seen some instances where on animal cruelty content, there's adverts for animal advocacy or NGOs on there. And this has been, it's really awful, because obviously those, in a way, you could argue, well, it's great if someone's seeing an animal advocacy website when they're going to watch cruelty, but it's also making money for the money that they're paying for that advertising is going in part to that abuser. So we have advocated on behalf of some of these organizations to say, this is not okay. This needs to be taken down.
So the more heinous of these things, if it's a very small number of people, chances are that if they see something for an advocacy group on while they're watching that video, that's not going to influence them very much. And especially people who are actually paying to see this done, like they're actually sending money to have this animal, this primate tortured and butchered and dismembered or whatever they're going to do. The bulk of it, according to the statistics, is the people who are, it's much more benign. They see it as light entertainment. They see it as it's friendly and all that. Yeah, those are the people who might look at the advocacy stuff and say, I never thought about it that way. And so it seems like the platform changes. I mean, the country international laws are really should be targeted to stop the access to the creature. The platform should be changed to really stop the really heinous acts. And then it becomes individual awareness. And that individual awareness is the stuff that I would think that advertising could have such a huge impact on. Because if I'm, you know, if I'm XYZ corporation out there and I'm advertising on YouTube all the time, I don't want my product associated with something that now the public is aware is, you know, cruelty, whether it's psychological cruelty or physical cruelty to an animal. So
definitely, I think, it could be a really, if to have a campaign like that, I think would be really, really powerful.
So how do we do that?
That's the challenge. I guess that's doing that research around, is there patterns to which companies are appearing as advertising on these videos, and then doing that outreach to them and educating them on the issue, getting them on board, and then coordinating something where if we get enough of these companies to do it, they will withdraw, you know, for a period of time or whatever we say is the best way to go about it to impact on the profits of the platforms. Because, you know, it is a really, for anything where we're working with corporates and companies and you're trying to get them to change, you know, that's hitting them where it hurts, as they say, is their money. You know, we do try our best to do public awareness. And when the platforms aren't responding. We will go to press and things like that. But it is a real challenge again to be able to do that against huge companies like Meta, who own Instagram and Facebook and WhatsApp. And they're used to negative news because people are, you know, are always pointing out the flaws in their product and, you know, the multiple issues around data protection and things like this. So it is hard, which again, I believe there's a strength in the coalition aspect of SMAC, because we have a greater reach. We've got more chance of being seen and heard than if it was a small organization trying it alone.
Can you explain the coalition and how many members and what those members do, and so that people understand that it isn't just two of you sitting in a room trying to do all of this?
Yes. Yeah, so SMAC is part of the Asia for Animals Coalition. And so Asia for Animals has existed for about 20 years. And that in itself has hundreds of members who are in the network. And they're all organizations that are working in some way to advance the protection of animals across Asia. And within Asia for Animals, there are separate working groups that have formed, which are made up of organizations that are working on specific issues. And the Social Media Animal Cruelty Coalition is one of those groups. So basically, Asia for Animals was receiving a lot of emails from their member organizations saying, you know, we've had this complaint from a member of the public who's seen this video with a puppy being crushed to death. And we're getting more and more of these, but we are not working on it. Do you know anyone who does? And it became quite apparent quite quickly that no one, in fact, had a dedicated effort or campaign against this, or that was happening, but it was, you know, it was just another thing on the pile of the animal NGOs list to try and tackle. So Asia for Animals made SMAC, this group, this coalition, made up of organizations who want to work on it. So we have 19 members at the moment, and this ranges from organizations in the US, Europe, and Asia, of course. And some of those are animal advocacy organizations, but others are primate focused, for example, or general animal welfare, like we have the RSPCA in the UK, have Born Free Foundation in the UK, but also in the Born Free USA. We have PASA, the Pan-African Sanctuary Alliance. So it's a really varied membership, but they've all got some link to the social media animal cruelty issue, whether that's just general concern or because they might even be based in a country where content is being created and they're trying to tackle it on the ground and, you know, investigate and maybe even prosecute those that are carrying this out.
If there was one thing that you personally would like to see happen, what would that be to sort of shift the tide in what's going on?
I think at the moment, well, we have two priorities. One, in terms of working with the social media platforms, is that I would like them to just police what they already say that they do not accept on their platform. But secondly, we want them to engage with us more to talk about these issues that are not, that go beyond the obvious violent cruelty. You know, all the psychological aspects that we've discussed, the different types of cruelty, because that's the biggest issue. And their platform, as we've already talked about with the vicious cycle, the normalization, it's so powerful. If they could recognize that this other form of cruelty is problematic and isn't suitable for being online, and better still, educate those people who are looking for it, engaging with it, that could, you know, that's, we're going to reach people that we could just never hope to reach in the numbers that we hope to reach. The other aspect for us, I suppose, is to do more with the user and the individual. So wanting the public to, again, it's all the same really, to look deeper, to understand what this cruelty is. And so we do have a range of approaches that we promote for people to how they themselves can behave, what actions they can take when they're online and they're engaging with content that shows animals. So we're on social media platforms, but one of the main things that you can do is you can actually, if you come across a piece of content that you think is problematic, you can report that to us on our website. And as I mentioned before, we're collecting this data to identify what is out there, what themes of cruelty we're finding, and then we can use that data in our conversations with the platforms to show them the priority areas that need addressing. But we do also have on our website as well, and we promote this all the time, is our 5 steps around what to do if you find content online that you, with animals, basically. And the first step is to be aware. And listening to this podcast is a really great place to start. So it's about having that critical thinking when you see animal content. And we have on our website also a range of videos called Ask Yourself. And these are designed to help give some prompts for things that people can look out for when they are viewing content or when they see something being shared and they're not sure. So I'd really encourage people to go and have a look at that. They don't show any graphic footage. They're just a guide to different types of cruelty that might not be as obvious. Then the next big thing is around engagement. So we say to people, do not engage. Do not watch it as much as you can avoid watching it. Do not like, do not comment, do not share. Do not put an angry emoji or an angry comment, because even though that feels like we are doing good by expressing our frustration or our anger and by trying to educate other people viewing the video, unfortunately, it all leads into that engagement, which is when you think about how social media works, the more engagement something gets, the more reach it has, the more people are going to see it, and it grows and grows and grows. And the social media platforms don't distinguish between an angry emoji and a positive thumbs up. It's just another number of engagement. And in fact, a few years back, there was a revelation that in some instances, Facebook were counting angry emojis as more engagement. But I think they may have changed that now. So just on the record, I think that may have been changed. But again, it just goes to show that engagement is engagement to the algorithm. It's not analyzing, people are angry about this, so let's squash it. It actually leads to it being promoted. And I was looking at a video earlier, a page on Facebook that has all about monkeys being kept as pets. And it's one person that looks like they've got a range of monkeys, and they upload 10 videos a day of them interacting with their pet monkeys, for want of a better description. And I looked on some of the videos. Some of them have 5,000 views, some have 50,000 views. And when I was looking at the comments, the majority of the comments were from people like us saying, this is bad, this is cruel, how dare you make this? Facebook, please take this down. And this was pretty consistent, anecdotally, but pretty consistent, that it was majority animal lovers, animal advocates that were commenting. And it really concerned me, because you're providing, I think on one example I looked at, it was 70% of the comments. And it's, you know, potentially we're adding a lot of engagement and boosting that content further. And this account was obviously, it was really worth it for them, because the sheer volume of content that they were pushing out, it's not a hobby, you know, it's more than that. And that's the fear when we say to people, you know, don't watch, don't engage, because you could be potentially helping them make money off the cruelty that they're inflicting on animals. And that's what none of us want at all. So that leads me to the final piece, which is report it. And every platform has a reporting feature. They're not always easy to find. And so we've made, again, a series of videos which will show you step by step where you can find the right option to report the content to the platforms. A lot of people say, yeah, but I report things, it doesn't get taken down. But we, again, from our own data, have analysed around 50% of the links that we've reported have been taken down eventually. So sometimes it can take more than one report and you might not get the result, but 50% is still not enough, obviously, but it's better than we thought it was. And we know in conversations with the platforms that they do look at it. And one of them has even said to us, well, it doesn't seem like a big priority because the report numbers are quite low compared to other issues on the platform like hate speech. So we think at this stage, there is lots and lots of value of reporting it to the platform. And so that's the ultimate action that we ask people to take. And then they can, of course, report it to us and it can be used in our data as well.
So they can find all of that on your website. You have all of those videos and things. What is that website for everyone?
Yeah, so that's www.smaccoalition.com. So that's S-M-A-C coalition.com.
Coalition.com. Okay. We will also have a link in the show notes to this and on the accompanying blog on that. Thank you for that. And thank you for everything that you're doing too. This is, it feels like we're trying to climb Everest here, a digital yeah. Everest, to get some resolution to this. But it does have ramifications in so much of, you know, what I've worked on directly in the wild and with sanctuaries in the demand and the pet trade and all of that, but then spinning back, like we were talking about on other aspects of our life, but it really pisses me off, I have to tell you. It's just the fact that people would be this cruel to animals. It just is.
I know.
And it's not just primates. You cover a number of other species as well. But, you know, our focus today was on primates. But just the idea that people would treat another creature on this planet with so unkindly.
It's really hard to understand. And you know, we can't change those people necessarily. So that's why we really want to push the platforms to say, don't give them a platform. Like, you are literally enabling this. Don't give them that platform. And it's really, for me, it's frustrating because it's basic things. It's like, if we were going to rank animal cruelty, which I don't like to do, but the most violent, extreme torture of a living being, it should just not be accepted on the social media. It's really difficult when you're having meetings with the platforms and they're promising you that they will look at it and they will take it down. And it's weeks later and nothing has happened. And in the meantime, more of these videos are appearing. It's always about judging sort of how fruitful is the relationship. But at this moment, you know, it's better to be talking to them and seeing slow change than nothing at all.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, as long as the channels of dialogue are open, there's always a hope and a prayer for change. So, yeah. Well, thank you for everything you're doing, Nicola, and keep up the work and let us know whatever we can do on this end to help support and promote what you're doing. And we will, like I said, we will make sure that all of this material is up there so people can check into it. I know a podcast format is one place to listen, but you need to also take the action. And I really would encourage everybody to jump in and try to do what they can to support you and support getting this stuff taken down. So anyway, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And go find a happy place. I know you deal with this all the time. Find your happy place thanks again. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I want to thank Nicola first for the courage it requires to take on a topic so reprehensible, and also for the inner strength it takes to stay focused on creating positive change. Links to SMAC Coalition and the vicious cycle chart that we discussed, as well as avenues in which we all can help put an end to this cruelty, can be found on our website at talkingapes.org. You've been listening to Talking Apes, the podcast that gets to the heart of what's happening with and to apes like us. Our conversations are with folks from across this planet of apes, writers, researchers, conservationist scientists, and activists, all getting us closer to understanding who we are and why. Because ensuring the survival of the other four great apes is the only way to ensure our own. I would like to thank our Talking Apes team, assistant producer Damel Zabond, and lead researcher Megan Lewandowski. I'd like to also welcome our newest member to the team, Mel Bradley. Mel has been a supporter informally for some time, so it's great to make her a formal member of the Talking Apes team. And of course, I would like to thank you, the donors and Patreon members who make Talking Apes possible through your generous support and the sharing of this podcast. If you appreciate what you hear on Talking Apes, consider supporting us. Please visit our website at talkingapes.org. Finally, as always, I would like to thank all of those on the front lines of great ape survival. We hope through Talking Apes we're able to shine a light on the incredible, selfless work you do every single day to ensure great apes, primates, and their forest homes survive and thrive deep into the future. I'm Jerry Ellis. Thanks for listening and for sharing Talking Apes.